Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of the Big Footy Bombercast. I am Bonza 34, but opposite me tonight is not the Grizz. It is Fairbump underscore play on. I will probably either call you mate or FB as we go, but how are you this evening?
I'm very well. I've never thought about whether the underscore would be pronounced in my name, but FB's fine. How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you. And we'll move straight to what we're here to talk about tonight. And that is probably the most unexpected win I think we've had in a number of years. And I mean, I generally go all the way back to the Freo game under James Hurd, where we came from the clouds after a horrid week that was pretty unexpected. This one's probably the most unexpected for me since then, because if you'd said to us last Friday, again, after the Port Adelaide game, that we would beat the Dogs the next week, I think everybody would have laughed at you.
Seemed impossible, didn't it? It's what a pleasant experience it is to win those sorts of games. It was just night and day, wasn't it? Totally different performance.
And the best part was we wrapped it up very early in the last quarter, so we were able to sort of just sit back and chill a little bit as fans, as opposed to sitting on a knife's edge until the last 5 minutes.
And, you know, that middle part of the game, we were truly dominant. You know, it was a very, hate to say, a very un-Essendon performance.
Unessential performances are something I hope we see a lot more of in the future if that's the result we get. But for me, I think it started in an area that I thought we were going to get pushed around in, and that was the midfield. So the Bulldogs midfielder is probably the opposite to us, whereas we're that little bit smaller, don't really have much grunt. They seem to base their midfield around grunt in the middle and winning that hard contested ball. But our midfielders just did not get bullied at all, I thought. After sort of that, probably that first quarter and a bit maybe where they sort of pushed us around a little bit. As you said, we were pretty dominant, and I think it started right in the middle of the ground.
It was just unreal how different it is to the last 10 times we've played them. I think we lost 9 of those and by an average of 45 points. The only one we knocked them off with was that game where Wright played out of his skin and kicked extremely straight. So just they have murdered us both around the ball, but with that sort of quick handball transition once they get it and get going as well. So it was great to see, and obviously led by Durham and Caldwell. And, you know, when you're wanting, we all want to see a different, an un-Essendon Essendon. But when you see those guys, you can just see the seeds of change that, you know, I don't think we could see when it was Merritt, Parrish, Scheel standing in the centre bounces. Just seeing Durham push Bontempelli under the ball and take it away is just, it felt like the future to me.
It certainly did, and you're right. It does feel a little bit like the winds of change, because you know, Zach still went out and got his 30-odd touches as he does and played a dominant performance. But Darcy, as has been the last few weeks, was down on his possession count if you consider that last year he was racking up 40 touches for fun. But Durham's definitely one, and I said at the start of the year that I thought he was going to be our most improved player, and I certainly wasn't the only one that said that. There's been plenty that said it, but he did do brilliantly on Bontempelli and actually led clearances for us. He had 6 clearances on the night himself. So he's not just doing that defensive job, is he? He's also going and winning the ball. And I think my favourite clearance of the night was the one where he handballed to Sammy Draper, who this week tucked the ball under his arm and ran and kicked it, as opposed to trying to fend off and look back over his shoulder like he did against Port.
You know, obviously in the preseason, there was talk of Durham spending time inside. And, you know, it feels like every year they toss someone out as, yeah, we think he might get some inside midfield minutes. And I don't know, I certainly, when I heard Durham, I thought, it's worth a go. I felt like he'd lack class. You know, there's a few guys that might have put in there to be the big body in the past. I think we're all probably surprised by his slickness. You know, there's times when he is just so clean and makes great choices. He had an incredible kick inside 50 in maybe that was the second quarter.
Yeah, and that goal he got in the last was also pretty impressive around the corner.
He's turning into a genuine A grader. And, you know, if we're going to get better, it's not by having guys who are, you know, we all go, yeah, he's pretty good. Like we're kind of looking for some superstars. And I have been really bullish on Caldwell since he first walked in. And I love footy players who have a boxing background. I feel like they're kind of hard nuts who are good on their feet. And Caldwell is a hard nut, but he also has that true class as well. And, you know, he's turning into a great ball user and, yeah, getting more and more confident. And I reckon with those two, there's a really bright future for a different looking midfield.
Yeah, I think you're right. Caldwell is also incredibly impressive on Friday night. The thing, so I will just quickly talk about clearances. So if you look at the clearances for the night, Liberatore had 10 for the Dogs, right? And then it falls away pretty quickly. The Bontempelli had five and Treloar had four, and then a handful of other players had two. Whereas you look at ours, and Durham, as I said earlier, had six. You then got Caldwell, Gresham, Parrish, Draper, Martin, all these blokes on four and three. It's a very spread midfield. So the Bulldogs, it felt like it was either, Libba was going to get it or they were going to struggle. Whereas our guys, it just felt that little bit more balanced around the stoppages. And I think if we can keep that going as opposed to having to rely on Darcy and Zach to rack up the clearances between them, that's just going to bode well for us moving forward.
It's great, isn't it? And Dersma's name wasn't featured there, but I thought he was another who's sort of actually showing more than I'd anticipated. He had really faded out at Port for a bit there. I just feel like he's kind of arriving at a time in his career where he's turned from boy into man, and we know he's, great gut runner and really helping out in transition. But he goes hard at the footy too, and really puts his body on the line. And once you're sort of getting that spread through 10 guys who are playing in different roles between the 250-meter lines, it's a much better look. It was so easy to shut down that sort of 2022, 23 midfield of Essendon's when there's really only three guys who are going to get it done for you. Now I think it's going to be much harder to shut us down.
And I think Dersma, as you mentioned, he played so well. That goal he kicked in the second quarter, where he took the mark about 48 out on a pretty tight angle, and he just went back, and you can almost see him saying, "I'm going to back myself." At that stage, we were 10 points down, and the Bulldogs had maybe started to get a little bit on top. And he went back and slotted the goal, and the atmosphere around the ground was unbelievable. And it sort of deflated the Dogs a little because they'd put all this effort into getting on top of us, and all of a sudden one great kick from outside 50, we're back within less than a goal. So to me, that was a real game changer, I thought. And then he obviously brought the arrow out, which as Essendon fans, we love the arrow now. We hated it when he was at Port, but we love it now. Isn't that the way
I
it
love
works?
the arrow so much. It's just my favorite thing in all of footy, suddenly, despite it being the worst thing in footy until very recently. But I love those moments in games where something, where you go back and you go, that's where the change started, because you're dead right. The Bulldogs were all over us, and oh my God, the commentators were all over us too. The slipper was getting ready to be sunk in, and that was a massive turning point. It was just a great finish. He really threaded it beautifully, but it was actually worth 12 points because we went back to the centre bounce and clearance and goal to Stringer as well. So suddenly we're in front, and that you just got to take your chances like that, and that's why class is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right, and you're right. That was obviously the Sammy Draper clearance that I was talking about earlier. But while we're on the topic of Dersma, let's talk the recruits. So Grizz and I, at the end of last year, we sat here and said, look, we've lost Zerk Thatcher, brought in Mackay. We've lost Sauce, but we brought in Goldstein. We were sitting here going, we lost Snell and brought in Gresham, and we were saying that generally, by and large, they had improved our list. So they were upgrades in the players we were losing, and I think we can safely say that now without any shadow of a doubt. Oh, there's been a lot of trash talked about the contract we gave Ben Mackay, and you can choose to believe whatever figures you want. He's been worth every single cent of that so far. He has been an absolute rock for us down back.
I'd consider tear it up, give him an extra 100 grand a year. It's he's the thing that's I didn't know he was such a good mover. I hadn't, the few times I dared to watch North Melbourne games, maybe he was injured. I'd seen him here and there. He played pretty well against us last year. I'd kind of had him pegged as, the big body we needed back there. But he links up well. He really is part of a great back six who can work together, I reckon. Like he moves way better than I had thought.
He does. I suppose the thing is, you look at his brother, who obviously plays that centre half forward. He's actually pretty mobile for Carlton. So I agree with you. I'm surprised by his mobility, but perhaps we shouldn't have been. And he did take the eight marks on the night. And the other thing that that I've enjoyed is so North fans are very adamant that his disposal was rubbish, that it just wasn't a great kick. And he might not be. We haven't really seen him take the pressure kick yet, but he does just play within himself. So he does just take the easy 45-meter, 15, 20-meter kick. He doesn't actually try and thread a needle, which is exactly what you want from one of your big fellas.
When you're taking, you know, 8 or 10 intercept marks a game, you can afford to be an adequate kick. You know, he's turning the ball around. He doesn't bite off more than he can chew. You never have a sense that he's, you know, I think poor kicks will hold you up. You think, you know, they take time. They go sideways. There's none of that with Mackay. You know, he usually makes a sensible choice pretty well and moves the ball on. And so I just don't see any real concern with his disposal. He's not tearing sides apart by foot, but, you know, then again, he's intercepting the ball and winning it back for us. So I think that's great. In terms of the other recruits, how easy is it to love Todd Goldstein?
I'll be honest, I didn't before this year. It's weird how I've suddenly changed my opinion of him. Quickly on Mackay, he did actually go at 100% on Friday night, 2 for 13 touches, which is good. But yeah, no, Goldstein, and the thing about Goldstein is, right, so Sauce and Draper last year, they worked okay together, but Sauce wasn't really able to go forward at all. Now, Draper can in patches, but Sauce really struggled with that. So I think last year we sort of lost a bit because Sauce is either in the ruck or on the bench. He wasn't able to float. Goldstein seems to be able to spend more time on the field than Sauce. He seems to be able to take the solo ruck, but he also just floats forward a little bit more. So I have fallen in love with him a little bit more this year than I thought I would. He actually led the game for hitouts on Friday night. And I think him and Draper really worked English over quite well. So there was a bit of talk about how good Tim English had been, but Goldstein had 22, Draper had 13, and English had 16, and I think Sam Darcy probably picked up a couple for the Dogs as well. So yeah, he's been really good. The other one, if we were talking about rucks, is Sam Draper. I thought he played a very good defensive game on Friday night against Liam Jones for the Dogs.
I reckon he, you know, for a late convert to footy, he is clearly a really good learner. You know, he is a smart footballer, and you don't always say that about people who haven't been playing from a young age. Even just seeing the way he's turned around his foot skills, you know, his kicking style until maybe even 12 months ago was just so loose. And, you know, he'd have some good results and he'd have some real messes. But just seeing him develop, I actually think there's still a fair bit of upside in him. And you're right, he did do a really disciplined job bringing the ball to ground. I feel like I actually am really hopeful that there'll be a breakout game for him just around the corner, because I feel like he is turning up. He's getting around the ground well. I think his marking confidence is a real key to his game. And there was probably 3 or 4 instances Friday night where, you know, he might have been at the back of the pack, ends up, the ball hits him in the chest. He could take a chest mark, but he's kind of flying without much intention. You know, it was amazing how many times that happened. You know, and if he was approaching pack saying, "This is mine, I'm coming," I reckon he'd be marking a lot more footy. But he's just lacking a bit of confidence there. But for a guy that seems so have so much bravado, I reckon he's actually a bit of a confidence player, and he might just, you know, a few good grabs might really turn things around for him.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And if you look at his stats, he's down on hitouts one and hitouts two advantage for the year. He's at 38.4 hitouts one and 22.4 hitouts two advantage, which is below his average of 42.1 and 30.1 respectively. So he is down, but I think you could probably argue that's because, as I said, I think Goldstein's able to spend more time out in the park than Sauce was. And so as a result, Drapes isn't going into the middle. The breakout game thing's interesting because Grizz and I talked about him last week, and yeah, we did point out he's going to be either 26 or 27 this year. So I just don't know how much more he's got in him. But I think if you compare him with a good ruckman, and there's always going to be that, not journeyman, because Todd's a little bit better than journeyman, but there's always going to be an experienced ruck you can probably find cheap to pair him with. I think that's probably going to be where we get best use out of him. I don't think he's ever going to be the number one standalone ruckman like we kind of hoped he would be.
He's an X-factor kind of guy, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I think it works
right.
It works well to have, you know, those best games will he'll do some freakish stuff. And, you know, I think the game that we all want to see is him taking half a dozen outlet marks. You know, there's a bit of a knock on Essendon's ability to move the ball when it's not in that sort of free-flowing turnover transition. So when we really have to work our way out of defence. So intercept marks are worth their weight in gold, and I'm sure we'll get to Harry Jones in our chat. But Draper is the wild card there. You know, I feel like that he doesn't have to do that much better than what he's doing. We just need him to take another 4 or 5 marks across a game. That would be amazing, and I think it'd be game-changing for us as a team in terms of having confidence to get the ball up the field a bit more fluidly.
Yeah, it absolutely would be. And you're right. We will turn our attention now to the forward line. And they are firing again in Peter Wright's absence. So I would not have predicted – I don't think anyone would have predicted the Harry Jones recovery that we have seen. He kicked, 2 goals on Friday night. He managed to get his hands on the ball with 6 marks and 13 disposals. And he just looked – again, like a player determined to take the game by the scruff, which we hadn't seen before. So, look, I happily admit that I had lost a lot of hope and a lot of faith in him. And, you know, he's proved me wrong. I think I said about 1,000 times when I was saying these things on the board that I really hope he proved me wrong. And thank God he has, because he has been a breath of fresh air alongside the ever-reliable Langford, who kicked 3, and Jakey Stringer managed to also put home a couple as well.
Langford's so bankable these days, isn't he? You really just, you know what you're going to get every week, which is great. But Jones, 13 touches, but there's plenty of 13 touch games going around that look pretty uninvolved, whereas Jones was in everything. I feel like he brought so many balls to ground, and even in his pressure game and getting a hand in on a loose ball and just turning it the right way. I reckon he had a great game, and I'm so pleased for him. I feel like in that Hawthorn game, he got to a lot of good spots and he halved so many contests. You know, he obviously there was a knock on him for not taking the marks that he needed to take, but he is a real competitor. And you don't necessarily start out thinking that because he's got that slight frame. And, you know, I think we'd all sort of seen him fly in from the side a bit and thought, oh, does he really want to kind of, you know, is he going to be tough enough to stand up? And, you know, I guess the way I've changed my tune is that I'm seeing a guy who is, whenever the ball is near him, he's competing so hard and it makes all the difference. And, you know, with Wright, I've got mixed feelings about Peter Wright's role in our team. And I think a lot of other, this is probably a blessing in disguise, because I actually think the forward line might be all the better for him having a few weeks out of it and coming back and needing to play a bit of a different role than he might have thought he needed to play.
Yeah, I think having him come back and not necessarily be the only source, only avenue to goal is something that we'll welcome as a side. I think it's something he'll welcome as a player too, because a lot of pressure was being put on his shoulders after we dropped Harry Jones. It was being made pretty clear that it was him or bust. Obviously, the question is going to be, how do you play Harry Jones, Peter Wright, Sam Draper, Todd Goldstein, Jake Stringer, and even Kyle Langford in the forward line? Kyle's a bit different because obviously there was that bizarre push to make him an inside mid, so we know he's agile, so we could probably get away with that. But it does start to border on the too heavy side. But I don't want to focus too much on that. What I do want to talk about is our small forward. So Alwyn Davey on Friday night, again, copped a fair bit of, I don't want to say heat, but there's still a few murmurings around him. So he did have 22 pressure acts, which was the most for any player for Essendon on the ground. I guess the problem a lot of us had with him, and something that he needs to work on, is just he doesn't seem to tackle all that. So there's a lot of arm slapping from Alwyn Davey. I'm seeing him get to it just a split second too late. So is that something you're seeing? How did you view his game on Friday night?
Gee, he made a terrible nervous start. He had a couple of terrible fumbles in the first 5 minutes.
That handball to Hobbs that got nowhere near it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was just a little pop it forward and hope. And I thought he did recover well. One sort of side observation is he looks so much more like his father this year than he had previously. Like just that extra, I reckon he's put on a few kilos and, yeah, a little bit more froggy. But look, pace is the thing, isn't it? It's you're right. There's a lot of arm slapping. He and maybe 6 of those are, you know, an important part of those 22 pressure acts. Maybe the arm slaps are, you know, worthwhile. I think the ones we worry about more are where it shouldn't be an arm slap, it should be a tackle. Look, will he get it in his game? You'd hope so over the next couple of years. He's still young. He is still light despite, you know, extra couple of kilos. I just think we desperately need in that the forward line that we have, and, you know, it may be exacerbated more if Wright comes back. We need pace. So, you know, I think that, you know, he brings that, and ideally I think we've got room for either two Davies or a Davey and a Wanganeen in that forward line. And I'd be retaining him because I thought we looked a lot better with pace. In the future, if he's sticking those tackles, it's going to be even better. But yeah, I was pleased to have him in the side.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he did start poorly and then worked into it quite well. And that goal he got was probably just rewards. The last one I just want to touch on from this game, it's a bit of a bizarre one, but the Jake Stringer, he got the free kick. Kyle took the advantage and kicked the goal. A lot was made in the media about the fact that Langford stole the goal from Stringer, and Stringer's a confidence player, so he should just handball the ball to Jake and kick the goal. What's your view on that? Because I look at that and go, Kyle Langford was 9 metres out with the ball in his hands. Just put the bloody thing through the middle of the sticks. I don't care if it's you or Jake Stringer. Who gives a shit? But the commentators and the media, for some reason, have made this thing out that Kyle has done the wrong thing and should have given the ball to Jake, which to me just seems bizarre.
I storm in a teacup, right? Like, I think on the balance of probabilities, he probably should have, but it's more like a 55-45 thing than a, you know, 100% thing. It would have been no harm. It was a pretty safe thing to do. It's nice to share and involve, but it's a bit of a non-issue. It was really interestingly, the next inside 50, Langford probably should have had a shot on goal and actually kind of went to Stringer on the fat side pocket, you know, in a what turned out to be a 2-on-1, I think. So it was interesting. I reckon Kyle thought that Kyle should have given it because the next time he was certainly looking for Jake.
Yeah, a little bit of a guilty conscience, you think, there on the next movement.
I reckon. Yeah, I reckon.
But we will move on from that game. Let's talk about the Crows. And look, I just want to give a quick shout out to Carlton, for playing them into form on the weekend, because they had looked absolutely dreadful until Saturday afternoon, where they managed to get up over the Blues by 2 points. Where do you think the game is going to be won on Friday night against the Crows? I mean, I look at it, the Adelaide Crows this year, and it was something that was mentioned on the commentary at the start of the game, and it's a point I think is valid, is that if Tex isn't firing at the moment, their forward line's pretty poor. And we saw that, you know, sort of on Saturday where the Texan managed to kick 4 goals straight and took 10 marks and looked, it was very, very impressive. It led the team for score involvements with 10. You know, is the key to beating Adelaide just shutting Tex Walker down, or is there something else that you view as the key moment for us to win on Friday night?
Yeah, I thought Adelaide made some structural changes against Carlton that made them way less predictable. And Tex, he's so clean. You know, he does a lot with not much. If the ball's near him, he marks it. He's a really reliable kick for goal. But you know, to me, the big difference in that Carlton game versus previous Adelaide games was that a bit more freedom and creativity through their midfield. So they had Soligo and Rochelle and Rankin all spending time in there. And, you know, it just, I think they'd been a bit one-paced before that. And it gave them a lot more looks. And so I really think it's a really good head-to-head midfield battle this weekend. I think we should be able to win this game. I think, you know, we probably all, like Adelaide are 1-4, 1-3. What are they? 1-5. They've had one win. And it was by 2 points. We're 3-2. We should be going into this as favourites, even though we're away. But, you know, we're probably all thinking Essendon and concerned that we might not get the biscuits. But to me, it's if we bring team pressure across in that midfield battle, Tex doesn't get the supply that he might get otherwise.
Yeah, you're right. So they are 1-4, and they're, but I mean, the thing is, I still look at percentage as being an important thing. Our percentage is still rubbish. So Yeah, they have won two less games than us, but they're actually only behind us by 9%, which is not huge. I agree with your thoughts that they, in the past, have been a really one-paced midfield. So ever since Danger left, they haven't really had that burst away from the pack that they had when he was there. And obviously, he's been gone for a number of years now. Rankin is someone that very interesting to me because he either seems to turn up and do something amazing or he just vanishes into the ether. And Saturday afternoon, he turned up and was amazing. He had 23 touches, kicked 3 goals, 1, which isn't bad for a bloke that spent some time in the middle. So, yeah, him and Saligo, as you mentioned, and Rochelli, they're going to definitely be an interesting bunch to take it to. But it'll be fascinating to see how not only how they go against us in the midfield, but also down back. So Carlton's small forward aren't that great. Neither are ours, really. But I think Gresham, Elwyn Davey potentially, you know, Dersmer if he goes forward, that those sort of guys are probably a little bit better. So it's going to be interesting to me to see how Adelaide respond to having to deal with a forward line that seems to be a bit more mobile than ours than Carlton's, which seems to be just kick it to Harry or Charlie.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's a good observation. The Crows defense is, you know, they did a great job on the weekend. I didn't think they had the height to match it with Mackay and Curnow, but you know, I think they got good support from their midfield. But you know, I think there is good opportunity if we can get the ball moving forward well, and you know, probably starts with our forward press. You know, one of the things I loved, sorry to dip back into last Friday night's game, was I don't remember a time when where our forward press was so effective. It's been a long, long time. You know, we've played well in rebound footy, but we locked the ball in so effectively there. So I think if we kind of get that many looks and we're able to keep turning the ball over and pumping it back in, that I think we'll kick a score.
Yeah, and that's why I think Jade Gresham's been so important. So he hasn't got the 25 touch game or the 30 touch game or 4 goal game yet, but he does just seem to add a little bit more experience and seems to be helping to structure up a little bit more. Speaking of the small forward, so it's come out today that Jai Menzies is probably going to miss 3 weeks, which is disappointing for him. At the same time, he probably borderline as to whether he was going to hold his spot or not. Where do we make the change here? So is it just as simple as Nick Hind now starts and will play as that small forward? Do we maybe go full crazy and bring in the other Davey brother? Or is it, you know, go full crazy again and move a Parrish or a Perkins back forward and try and cover him that way? I mean, how do you see that the structure lining up?
The most conservative move is, you know, is Hind into the starting lineup and Sheil as the sub. You know, he played some limited minutes in the VFL and you know, from my observations, kind of wandered around and, you know, I don't know how competitive he was.
Yeah, look, I did see the words dial it in. He's just dialing it in. I saw that a lot, which I was pretty disappointed in, but maybe it was because he's, you know, building his body back up.
Yeah, there's managed minutes. I'm not sure you're meant to, you know, do managed effort. I think you're meant to buckle up when you're on field. But regardless, you know, that's the conservative move. You know, the guy I am really keen to see get a run is Archie Roberts. And so there's, you know, there's not a like for like match there. If they're shuffling the deck chairs, I'd love them to find a way to get him in. It might involve pushing Martin back to a wing and getting Roberts to halfback, but that's probably
music, you know, to my ears. Absolute music to my ears. That one.
Yeah. I think Roberts is better suited to that role, and I think just on Martin, I feel like he's biting off the 100% glory kick too often. He's, you know, I think he would just trying to get that right risk judgment around risk. It, you know, will be an important part of his game if he's going to be back there, but there's just more leeway to take that extra bit of risk if he's kicking from, you know,
he needs to play within his role, doesn't he, really?
If he's, particularly if he's, you know, the deeper he goes back. So, you know, that's a move I'd love to see, but I don't think it's going to happen. So I feel like we'll see Hind in and Sheil popping up. But, you know, Robertson, the other one name that kind of gets bandied about a bit is Hayes. And I don't think this is the week for him. You know, Laverde is the one in the gun. I think Laverde and Fogarty is probably a good match up this week. Laverde's, you know, he's a trier. I'm so surprised by Laverde. When we first saw him, he was so athletic and he looked like he would end up with a fair bit of flair. But he, you know, he's moved to defence, has seen him be just an honest trier. Like, he's a big body, shows up. But yeah, I think there's room for someone to go past him, and I think it will be Hayes. But
I think years of injury have probably taken their toll on poor old Jaden, and he's probably moving as well as could be expected as someone who's had his chronic and reoccurring injuries.
For sure. It's so great to see him out there, you know, after, you know, at a certain stage we probably, you know, many of us thought it might be curtains for him. And yeah, I think that sort of Adelaide's tall stocks, there's a lot of sort of mid 190s guys, and you know, I feel like that's, you know, that works well for Laverde, and you know, Hayes probably can play a bit taller. I think that'd be probably another opportunity not too far away for him to have a look.
Yeah, I think the other way to get Roberts in is obviously to bring Hind into the side. You could then even, and I shudder to do this because I think he's been in cracking form, is move Heppel to sub to give his body a bit of a break before we head into Anzac Day. Because if you're going to give him a rest or a break, you probably don't want to give him a week off, because I feel like he's a player now at his age that needs to continual game time. So you'd play him as sub, because you certainly wouldn't be sending him to the VFL based on how he's been recently.
You can tell he's been going well because it's been quiet. conversation around Dyson Heppel has been very quiet.
Yeah, Grizz has been exceptionally smug about it, at least recently. So
he's done so well. I didn't think he had this level in him this year. He's been exceptional the last few weeks, and you know, he's always had that overhead capability, which for a guy his size is so valuable. You know, he's an in between size, but he competes really hard in the air. But he's just been just truly solid. So yeah, I agree. He's you know, if you can give him a rest, and that's probably something, you know, they'll know inside the tent how he's tracking, and you know, if he's flying, they'll probably keep him in. But you're right, it wouldn't be a bad week if he's needs a freshen up.
The counter to all of this is, of course, I'm not sure if you've seen, but Brad Scott has come out today and said that we're not in a position to rest players. So, you know, but I think moving Heppel to subs is a little bit different than say, a Geelong who, you know, give Joel Saward 3 weeks off throughout the year to rest his body. It's a little bit of a different change, but I'll take your tip. I won't end it here. I'll take your tip, and then I want to quickly ask you a question. So is Adelaide or Essendon on Friday night?
Yeah, I think Essendon will win this. Yep.
Yeah, look, I'll tip the Bombers too. The question I want to ask you, I'm just moving, being a little cheeky here, I'm going to move away from Essendon specifically, but I'll read you a quote that came out on the weekend. So have you seen the Zach Butters incident?
Yes, I did.
This is what Michael Christian had to say about Zach Butters not getting suspended. "We've got to be very careful that we allow players the opportunity to contest the ball. It's an integral part of the way the game is played, and we felt Zach Butters did that." Is that not the biggest load of shit you have heard this week? Because they have done everything except protect the play. Look, Peter Wright, I'm not going to go into my rants about him again. I still say he was contesting the ball. How many players in the last 2 years have been suspended going for the ball, but all of a sudden a Brownlow favourite is going for the ball, and now we want to encourage players that, and we're not going to penalise a player going for the ball? Am I crazy, or is that a massive backflip from the AFL match review officer?
Yeah, look, I think you could find a sports bet account that's Christian Michael and not Michael Christian, you know, where he's got a few dollars on Butters for the Brownlow, I reckon. It's the
hypocrisy that blows me away, really. It's unbelievable.
There's split second timing in these ones, isn't there? And you know, the thing with the Butters one was, he sort of got a hand on the footy, but I tell you what, that was, you know, he skimmed past that footy and took the body. You know, I think it would have been very, very easy to argue that was a bump. It was a pretty token effort to the footy. I've seen Butters clean up a lot of loose balls, and I'll tell you what, they don't just graze the fingers. He gets some, you know, he's got super sticky hands. He knows where the footy is. So, I reckon he bumped.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Cochin on Shield in that prelim where he got away with it because it was a grand final next week. But that will do us for this evening. So thank you very much for appearing tonight. And hopefully we get you back on in future for more episodes.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a treat. Yeah.
As always, remember to please like, subscribe, and tell all your friends to listen to us.